Vsak četrti ponedeljek ob 8:30 označujemo teritorij. Teritorij teatra.
Hamlet, Ofelija, takoj sem! Takoj sem!
Lep dober večer in lepo pozdravljeni na nekoliko razmočenem teritoriju teatra, ki se danes osredotoča predvsem na Tima Echelsa, umetniškega vodjo britanske gledališke skupine Forced Entertainment, ki je to soboto gostovala na našem Exodusu. Z vami sva na tehnički strani Srečko, za mikrofonom pa Ana. Forced Entertainment je, kot že omenjeno, britanska gledališka skupina, katere jedro sestavlja 6 ljudi. To so performerji Robin Arthur, Richard Loudon, Claire Marshall, Kathy Naden, Terry O'Connor in njihov umetniški vodja, Tim Echols. Skupina je bila uradno ustanovljena 1984. leta in odtlej drži prvotno postavo. Tekom let so seveda sodelovali z drugimi gledališkimi umetniki, kot skupina pa tudi kot posamezniki. Morda je vredno omeniti, da so se spoznali na eni od londonskih fakultet, kjer je večina študirala književnost. To pojasni tudi njihove visoko razvite jezikovne spretnosti. Forced Entertainment so ena redkih uspešnih in prepoznavnih ekip, poleg morda Fabrove Trublane, ki si svojega delovnega okolja ni ustvarila v prestolnici. Če deluje Fabrova kompanija v Antwerpnu, so Forced Entertainment nastanjeni v industrijskem Sheffieldu na severu države, ki je po kulturni pomembnosti in odprtosti blizu Manchesteru. Razen Forced Entertainment in po Echelsovih besedah možnosti hitrega prebega na podeželje, v Sheffieldu ni dosti relevantnega dogajanja. Razlogi za tako specifičen izbor kraja niso posebej kompleksni, vsaj v prvem planu ne. Echols priznava, da se sam, tako kot celotna ekipa, v danem okolju bolje počuti in se z njim lažje identificira, če ne zaradi drugega, vsaj zaradi govornega dialekta. Kot dodaja, je bila v 80-ih letih, ko je bila skupina ustanovljena, izbrati sever tudi politična odločitev. Sever Velike Britanije je bil namreč zaradi svoje socialne strukture najmočneje na udaru vladavine Margaret Thatcher, kar je sprožilo tudi najmočnejša odporniška gibanja. Sheffield je bil potem takem tudi izbira iz solidarnosti. Dejstvo, da ustvarjajo zunaj velikega kulturnega centra, kot je London, pogojuje tudi njihovo specifično estetiko in metode dela. Forced Entertainment so nikogaršnje gledališče, ne proizvajajo prepoznavnega žanra, v gledališkem svetu so skorajšnji unikum. Ne obravnavajo konceptov, ampak raje raziskujejo principe in predvsem veliko improvizirajo. V svoji 26-letni zgodovini so Forced Entertainment ustvarili množico predstav z zelo dolgimi, pa tudi zelo kratkimi naslovi. Kot na primer, Sight is the sense that dying people tend to lose first. Ali pa Who can sing a song to unfrighten me? Pa tudi Paradise, Bloody Mass, Some confusions in the law about love in tako dalje. Med natanko 50 projekti je tudi nekaj durational performansov, med njimi že prej omenjeni Who can sing a song to unfrighten me, ki je trajal celih 24 ur. Nekoliko manj, zgolj 12 ur je nanesla predstava Marathon Lexicon, lecture performance, ki se je tematsko pomikal od A do Z, od Accidents in Anticlimaxes, skozi Breath in Blood, vse do Loss, Rules, Trembling, Voyeurism. Enega od njihovih dolgometražcev smo lahko pred 6 leti spremljali tudi v Ljubljani. Slovenski publiki so se takrat premierno predstavili s projektom Quizula, ki sloni na 2000 vprašanjih, ki jih je za nastopajoča performerja pripravil Etchels in vključujejo vse od katero je glavno mesto Španije, kaj je drevo, zakaj se ljudje bojijo umreti, do je bil John Wayne zares pogumen. Kot se je pošalil Etchels, je prednost take zvrsti dogodka ta, da ga ni mogoče vaditi, oziroma ga je vaditi prepovedano, ker se sicer izgubi dragocena nepredvidljivost odgovorov. Na ljubljanski Exodus so to pot prišli z The Thrill of It All, o katerem smo na radiju že poročali. Naj spomnimo samo, da gre za nekakšen kabaret z 9 udeleženci, ki se stalno sprehaja po robu reprezentacije, a to nikoli ne postane. Gledalce popelje na potovanje med absurdom, hrupom, samoironijo, izvrstnim britanskim humorjem, obenem pa je dogodek smrtno resen v raziskovanju in razkrivanju lastnih postopkov. Sledi torej krajši intervju s Timom Etchelsom, Capo di Banda, ki je bil posnet pretekli petek, nekaj minut zatem, ko mu je Faber predal kuratorsko štafeto za Exodus 2013.
You've been together with the core of your group for 26-25 years.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering what stimulates you, what motivates you, what keeps you together actually, because it's a long period of time.
Yeah, it's very long time. I mean, well, the one thing that we gain, I think, in that time is that you build up a set of skills and conversations and ideas. So you're drawing constantly on those things as you go forwards in the work. You also the bad thing is that you know each other too well. I mean, it's really like a family relationship or something like that. So you sometimes have the feeling you know too well what this person will say now or what they will do now. So I think what we try to do every project that we make is to set ourselves a different challenge. Mm-hmm. And that might be about making a different formal decision on how the piece will be, inviting different collaborators, really trying to take a very particular approach. And I think those things are there because you're trying to make sure that you don't have this horrible feeling like, oh my God, we've been here too long. And so far, I mean, you know, it feels like this lively, dynamic, argumentative, creative conversation mm-hmm. still continues. So we're lucky, I think, in that.
And what's your position as an artistic director processually? How do you come in into the process? Do you lead it? Do you cut it? How rigid is your position?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, you know, some days I would say I'm really like the filing clerk for the group. Like, we're all talking, everybody's got ideas, I'm busy trying to keep track of what everybody's saying, what I'm saying, and then I'm trying to organize that in the rehearsals. Mm-hmm. Other days it feels more like, you know, I came with an idea and that's what we're pursuing, and there's a level of trust and responsibility to me that, you know, maybe not everybody in the room knows what's happening right now, but they sense that I am chasing something.
Channeling something.
Yeah. So it's a bit both, really. And I think, you know, I'm very aware that that work with the group is something that can only happen in that kind of dialogue space with, you know, that group of people and other people that we invite in. I feel like that's what the work is, actually. Mm. I have this kind of sculpting or initiating or editing, provoking function, but that many people in the group have a function, and it's all a conversation. I mean, everybody has his or her opinion about mm-hmm. everything that we do.
Alteration, as I see it. As far as I know your work, I would, and also as you said now, I would describe it as collaborative always. Mm. And what is crucial to your processes, beside the fact that you function very well together, You often, I read some text of yours, and you often talk about games you play.
Yeah.
How would you define a game?
I mean, I think we probably use that word in a not usual way, but I think for us, finding the game of a piece is a bit like saying finding the structure of it, or finding the dynamic structure, the dynamic energy for the piece. So I think understanding the game is about figuring out how we can be, how we can explore, how we can be together in the very particular space of this piece. So in that way, you could say there's a game to interviewing. Mm-hmm. Like, what is the game of interviewing? Asking questions and answering questions. How can you play that game? You can be a nice interviewer, you can be a horrible interviewer, you can be a difficult interview person that doesn't say anything, another one that says too many things. I mean, so it's understanding, I suppose, every situation or interaction as a structure and as a game that you could play.
So you extract certain rules from everyday life also and put it into theatrical performative space.
I mean, it could be from everyday life, but it could also be that, you know, we might start to do something in improvisation in the studio. You know, it could be that you know, people start to rearrange the furniture, and then you say, well, what's the game in that? What can you do with that?
I understand. Yeah.
So it's really, I think it's, you know, oftentimes because we work a lot from improvisation, what we're doing is we're working with, you know, bodies in space, people doing things as raw material. So I suppose if you're a writer, you write words down and you see what's happening. And I think as a theatre maker in that sense, a performance maker, people do things and you start to wonder what they're doing and how you can make that in a different shape to be something more. I mean, it's maybe a bit interesting, but how do you make it more interesting?
In certain fragments in your book, you wrote about the flickering of real time and playtime. And I was wondering where these two actually meet.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, in at one level in theatre, there's something, you could say there's something about pretending. So this interests me a lot, like if you wear a mask or a stupid costume or a wig, or if you change your voice and speak differently than you normally speak, or you do something that's obviously pretending. This is a kind of playtime, if you like. It's something where we step from the more normal space of being into something that's exaggerated or
enhanced. Enhanced is this?
Yes, enhanced. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And then on the other hand, let's say below that, there's a more ordinary way of being, which is to say, we just sit here, we're talking. I'm pretending to be me rather than pretending to be Julius Caesar or a horse or you know, something like that. So I'm interested in this sort of movement between, you know, an ordinary state and a sort of enhanced or playful or theatrical kind of state. And I think that's a dynamic thing in many of the performances that I've made, this sort of moving in between those two things.
So what's your relation towards representation then?
I mean, I suppose what interests me is, I mean, I would never think of the pieces as really representing anything, but I'm interested in the process of representation, like the idea of it. Like, how could you, I think a lot of the work, I mean, not all of it, but in many of the works, there's a little bit this question of, well, how could you be or represent another person or another experience or a non-human experience, like what's that about even as a process? So I find it very intriguing, although it's not something that I never would look at a performance and be seduced by representation. For me, it's always I'm interested in it as a kind of curious you know, fact of what humans do, but I'm not interested in believing in it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah. Your work is processually based. It's really, it's very deep improvisational work. Do you ever work with concepts, or what is your relation towards concepts? Do you ever start with, like, let's say, just a topic?
Yeah, I mean, occasionally do, and in some ways I quite like working that way, but I think, you know, what we trust when I'm working with the group, I think what we trust more than anything is people in space doing things. Like, this makes sense to me in a really
raw,
solid way, yeah, raw way. Whereas concepts, you know, you can say your performance is about, you know, the change in the financial markets between the West and China, but actually, what does that mean? Like, I'm more interested in saying the performance has three people and they're all standing on chairs. Like, that means something to me. It's concrete. So this is, in a way, where we tend to start. And often, I think when we've made performances that look quite conceptual, some of them, they started from a big, chaotic, improvisational mess, and we spend like 3 months chipping away until actually what you've got is a very simple, quite conceptual frame. But it came the hard way, you know, from when you look at it finally, you think, ah, oh, we could have made that in 3 weeks. You know, like, if we'd started from this, would have been no work at all. But we tend to start from a very, you know, an exploratory, improvisatory sort of process. So that's how it takes a long time to really boil things down to what's really essential.
So you offer your audience an experience. Do you think you teach them also something? Because I have this impression when you teach us not to look at situation as a narrative situation. What do you think you give out?
I mean, I think one of the things that it depends on the work, but I think one of the things that we've been interested in together is the sort of evolving situation, if you like, with the audience that a lot of the time you're reflecting on what is happening here. And how am I putting this together with this, or what did I expect, or where am I going now? So it's not narrative, but it is about the unfolding of time and the negotiation of time between the people on the stage and also with the audience. This act of I think a lot about this idea of making time pass in different ways, and getting people to think about that and to realize their own. I think if it teaches anything, maybe one of the things that we're interested in is teaching people their agency in making meaning and in constructing the thing that's actually happening in front of them. So it's very open work in some ways, and it really tries to get you to reflect on your own capacities as an audience member.
I'm always wondering, when I see a piece, how do the creators decide when to start, when to end it, when to take the audience in, and where to leave them when they end, actually?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's interesting. I mean, we've made with the company a whole bunch of very long performances, 6 hours or 24 hours. And in those, we don't make that decision. I mean, in a sense, we say people can arrive anytime, they can leave anytime, they can come back anytime. And I think with that what you're doing is you're relinquishing, giving up control over this very theatrical kind of frame that, as a theatre maker normally, you determine when it starts and how long it goes and then when it stops. So the liberating thing about the very long pieces is that we give up on that. We say, well, people can choose, it's fine. But normally, you know, with the more theatre performances, then yes, you're controlling, you know, like an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours, and you're really making a kind of architectural, dramaturgical shape inside this amount of time. And yeah, I mean, it's an agreement that you will take people on a journey. I mean, it might be you say our journey is totally flat, or you can make this very classical mountain shape that drama has. But one way or another, you're like really, you know, you're working inside a frame, and you make a journey. I mean, you can make it any different kind you want. But in fact, an hour and a half or 2 hours has a certain energy. You know, it has a certain shape, and your job is to manipulate that frame and to, you know, make time and space flow differently for this period of time.
And to come back with gifts, as you also said.
Yeah, this is a nice thought, to come back with gifts.
It's a very poetical thought.
Yeah, it's poetic.
But what would the gifts be? I mean, to you.
To me?
To you as a performer, let's say, to as a creator. What is the impact?
The desire is to make work that helps people attend to pay attention to the world and their place in it and their experience in it. And I think that's the best gift you can take from watching something, that it makes you see again, re-see what you're normally
It nurtures your vision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
and
and makes you aware of your own role in an agency in making the world. Because when we look, we make actually.
There's again from certain fragments, which is a very interesting book, although very fragmented. You speak about death and performance.
Well, I think you know. To me, one of the interesting things about performance is that it's a space in which human beings try to measure themselves against things that that fascinate them, maybe things that they're frightened of, maybe things that they can't know, death is clearly one of these things. So it becomes very fascinating. I think theatre and performance are in a certain way quite obsessed with death, because it's the opposite of what's happening, you know. And it's also about the limits of representation, if you like. So if I pretend to be another human being, it's probably not convincing, but it's at least plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And if I pretend to be an animal or a tree or something, that's absurd. And if I pretend to be dead, it's also absurd because I'm always breathing. And so in a way, when you play animal, which we have done in many of the pieces, or you play dead, which we have done in many of the pieces, you open the kind of fundamental absurdity of performative representation. It's like, yeah, you're not dead, it's stupid. But in a way, in this stupidity, there's also a kind of charge, you know, something happens. So it's that, I think, that's interesting.
How do you... Well, I was reading some of the reviews on the web, and they mostly say that you constantly break theatrical conventions. And do you... First, do you agree with this? Do you do it intentionally? Do you reflect this in the process? The let's say, the homogeneous set of theatrical conventions.
Yeah. I mean, I think we draw on... the language of theatre, cabaret, shows, show business. Like, there's a whole bunch of things that we, in a way, grab in order to make some use of them in the work, because we like to build what we're doing on something. Like, we don't make up a whole new dream universe that nobody ever heard anything about.
Mm-hmm.
We're really working with stuff that people will, in a way, know. And then, yeah, I think you're trying to twist that stuff into out of shape, out of its normal shape, so that it can speak about the things that you want to articulate. And yeah, I think some of that is breaking conventions. It's more, to me, it's more like working with the frame, you know, and the frame is theatre and performance. There's a frame of expectation and knowledge that people bring with them, and you play with that. I didn't see it as necessarily as hugely destructive or iconoclastic. It's more to me about using a bunch of things that somebody left lying in a room, you know, called theatre.
Like a ghost.
Yeah, you can pick it up, you know, do something with it.
What would your parameters of evaluation of other people's work would be? Do you have this very binary position, good, bad? How is your visual apparatus like? What do you search?
What I'm interested in is when people take an idea far and they're not frightened to push on things. And I think when I'm critical, it's because I see people... When we're working and we criticize ourselves, we say, we have 5 bad ideas when 1 good one would do. That's our criticism in rehearsals. And I think that's, if I see work that I'm unhappy about, it's often because you feel people are running around trying to invent many things to excite or please. And actually, it would be maybe more interesting if they just chose one of them and really pushed. I'm interested in people who go far on something. And I think, you don't see that all the time. But I know it when I encounter it, I think.
So will you be searching for this kind of quality in the pieces you will choose for?
Yeah, I'm sure I will. And what's great about that as well is that it can be from very unexpected places. Like, I've seen a lot of it now and it's been around, but the first time that I saw Richard Maxwell's work, American writer and director, I was really excited because it was plays, like it was drama and it had songs. And like normally if somebody said to me, Tim, it's plays and there are songs, I would be like, I'm not going, I don't want to be anywhere near this. but actually there it was. It's like it's a musical and it's got a little story and it's fantastic. And also it had some, like the link for me was probably in the way that they performed those early pieces, which was very flat, very monotone, blank. And this was, for me, a point of connection because it's something that we relate to, I think, in terms of the performance work. So, it was a real feeling of a surprise. Suddenly I'm watching this work that's coming much more out of literary theatre, out of drama, narrative, play. But great for that. But it's really somebody taking a line, an unexpected line through the territory, and I think that's what I would be looking for.
Mm-hmm. Maybe the last question, since you also work as a writer and in other fields, why did you decide for this anyways? I mean, the work of a writer is very solitary and different. Did you need this somehow?
Yeah, I mean, I was probably writing before I started making performance. I think when I was a kid even, I was very busy with language. But I do see, the work with the group is, an amazing sort of backbone to my practice in the last 26 years. But I know that alongside that, I've needed to and want to find spaces where I can work on my own. And writing or working in visual art is a space where I can go to sort of do something that's not about this constant group process of interrogation and negotiation, because that's what that is. It's 24 hours a day, 365 days a year of having everything you say questioned by somebody else.
Yeah.
It's a great joy and a great horror,
Sometimes it's nice to be the king of the hill also.
Yeah, you have your own space, nobody's watching me at the computer saying, don't put that word there, or, are you sure, why have you done that? And that's nice. I mean, it's a holiday in a way.
Poslušali smo intervju s Timom Echelsom, umetniškim vodjo britanske gledališke skupine Forced Entertainment. Teritorij teatra smo označili, z vami pa sva bila Srečko in Ana. Lahko noč.
Vsak četrti ponedeljek ob 8:30 označujemo teritorij. Teritorij teatra.
Hamlet, Ofelija, takoj sem! Takoj sem!